Representative Becker Flynn. The Committee of Legislative Assistant has taken a roll, and we have a quorum. A quorum is present. And may I have the following approve the minutes for the March 12th meeting?
Mr. Chair, I have reviewed the minutes. They look fine, and I would like to move them.
Representative Poston moves that approve the minutes for the March 12th meeting. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is prevails. The March 12th minutes have been approved. Because of the coming Thursday, we're going to be having a committee meeting, members, on Thursday, March 22nd, is the first committee deadline. And the House Veterans Affairs Division will be meeting on Thursday for about 15, 20 minutes after the session, and to call a chair in room 10 here and to hear bills, because we want to make sure we get all the bills heard before the deadline. So, again, that will be this Thursday, March 22nd, about 15 to 20 minutes after the House floor session is completed, and we'll be back here on room 10. This is room 5, so just down the hall, room 10. So thank you. First bill on the agenda is House File 3503. And Representative Torgelson, please, you're at the table already. Please bring your bill before us. And I move House File 3503 before the committee, and that it would be re-referred to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3503 deals with the veterans issues, and I do have a DE1, Mr. Chair, that I would like to pass to get the bill in the shape I would like.
Go ahead and explain your DE1.
Thank you. The original bill was drafted last year, and there were some changes made in law last year that affect this particular issue. So the DE1 is necessary in order to get the language to it so it matches up with current law, and if you need any more detail on that, I would have to refer to staff to help me out.
Okay, I will move Representative Torkelson's author amendment to get the bill in the shape, and the author would like to have staff maybe explain the DE1. Is that what was that your?
I think only if my explanation is inadequate, Mr.
Okay, President. We're good to go. Is there any discussion? All in favor of the DE1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is approved, and the motion prevails. So go ahead and go on with your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At this time, I'd like to present a testifier who will explain the details.
Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. My name is Cindy Schultz, and I live in New Ulm, Minnesota.
Could you bring the microphone up closer to you? Thank you. Okay.
How's this?
Yes.
Okay. My name is Cindy Schultz, and I'm here today with two of my three children, Gabe and Alexandria. It's an honor to be asked to discuss eligibility for property tax reductions for disabled and deceased veterans at this hearing. In order to fully understand the potential impact of this bill, it's important that you hear the story of one veteran. My husband, Gene, enlisted in the U.S. Navy while in high school in 1966. The day after graduation, he left for basic training. What mother lets their oldest child do that? Well, I can say that because our son, Michael, did exactly the same thing by enlisting in the Minnesota National Guard while in high school. I soon realized that it's not about the mother's wishes. Instead, it was about their strong desire to serve and honor our country. As a young 18-year-old, Gene served in the Vietnam War for 3 years as a machinist mate aboard the USS Morton. He was proud and honored to fight for our freedoms just as his father and grandfather did. Gene went on from military to get married, raise a family, and run a successful business. In 2010, Gene was diagnosed with lymphoma. He read in veterans' newsletters that exposure to Agent Orange contributed to the onset of various conditions, with lymphoma being one of them. He went through the Veterans Administration and medical process that determined that his ship had been exposed to Agent Orange during his tours of duty in Vietnam. Gene received treatments for his lymphoma for 7 years before passing away in February of 2017. During that seven-year span, the VA determined that he was disabled both physically and emotionally due to the Agent Orange exposure. Initially, he was rated at 20 or 30% disabled and received monthly financial compensation. As the disease progressed and the treatments took their toll, his status changed to 100% temporarily disabled. How does one quantify a percentage of disability on a piece of paper? Who decides it's a temporary illness when you miss holidays, birthdays, family events, and even your son's graduation and father's funeral because of chronic debilitating pain and hospitalization? Gene had to sell his third-generation family business because he was too tired, ill, and confused by the cancer treatments. How is this not a permanent disability when you have dealt with it for 10% of your life? There is no box to check on a piece of paper that truly describes what has happened to your body, mind, and spirit. After Gene's death, I was contacted by my local Veterans Services, who were very helpful in assisting our family to access benefits. A property tax reduction was granted for 1 year due to Gene's 100% temporary disability status at the time of his death. The counterpart benefit for those rated with a 100% permanent disability is an extended time period for property tax reduction. I believe the true intention of the original law regarding property tax was to provide for and to show gratitude to disabled veterans and their families for their sacrifices. However, the subjective term temporarily becomes a semantic barrier to those affected and prevents them from accessing benefits that they deserve. It was explained to me that the federal VA doesn't classify a person as 100% permanently disabled until they have had a chance to fix the disability. So even though Gene dealt with this condition for 7 years, the time between diagnosis and death was not significant enough to meet the federal standards for a permanent rating. The fact that he died from a service-related condition did not elevate his status to permanently disabled, rendering his family ineligible for this exemption. Other veterans and families have similar stories. We are not unique. I feel the proposed bill should state that if you die from service-related circumstances, regardless of your percent disability prior to death, you should be given 100% disability status because your primary cause of death was connected to your service. Even though Gene's cause of death was delayed, he and vets like him deserve the benefits that go with 100% disability status because their fatal condition was related to their service. By passing this bill, the people of Minnesota are demonstrating their gratitude and appreciation in both the symbolic and tangible manner to those veterans for their service and sacrifice. I sincerely appreciate that this legislature is addressing the current standards for disabled veterans' benefits. Thank you for allowing me to share Gene's story on behalf of the families of deceased and disabled veterans. I'm grateful for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Mrs. Schultz. And this has been an issue we've been working on for years in terms of veterans, especially the spouse benefits, the surviving spouse benefits. And this is something we've improved on. I think originally it was a 2-year benefit, then a 5-year benefit. Now it's currently, the current law is an 8-year benefit. So for surviving spouses. And this is just another area. When I saw the language on this and Chair Torgelson brought it to my attention, I said, yeah, this is something we need to hear, something we need to go forward on, and hopefully that's going to be the case. But I see Mr. Johnson from the MDVA. You kind of gave me a signal that you'd like to address the committee too. Come forward.
Chair Deputy, members of the committee, my name is Ben Johnson. I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I want to thank the testifier. Appreciate putting faces and names to actual items of interest to the legislature and work that they can do on behalf of the veterans in the state of Minnesota. I'm testifying not in support or opposition to this bill, just wanted to provide some information about the potential unintended consequences of the change of this language. As was described, the idea of 100% versus 100% permanent in total is a very significant distinction. Deleting permanent status could add to the roles of those eligible for the homestead market value exclusion. Again, not commenting on the value or challenge associated with that, simply want to highlight that people may not be permanent in total if they're 100%. Normally, 100% is awarded, there's an opportunity to review that assessment within 2 to 5 years. You can also get 100% unpermanent during active treatment for things like cancer or knee replacement, PTSD, those sorts of things. So an assessment of 100% service-connected disability could open this existing program to a lot of individuals who are not permanent in total. So the distinction is in law for a reason. I just wanted to highlight that concern. Again, not advocating for or against this change, just for information.
Thank you. Any questions for the department, Mr. Johnson? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. And it looks like Mr. Dilks with the DAV.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Trent Dilks, Legislative Director for the DAV. Just wanted to raise the point that we did House File 119, Senate File 84 last year, and with the language changes in the programs in the part of that that did pass through, might warrant taking another look at this, because dependency and indemnity compensation for a veteran, regardless of their percentage before passing away, should have, and what I understand in actions, has created eligibility for the widows to apply for the first time, regardless of the level. So I know the goal of 119 and 84 and the part that was passed, dependency indemnity compensation can be awarded to the spouse if the veteran passes away as a result of a service-connected condition. And in this case, in any case, if it was 50%, but it was as the cause of death and then the surviving spouse could apply for that, they would then become eligible as if the veteran had been 100% permanent in total. So I just wanted to make the staff and the chair aware that as it comes up to the next stop, maybe we can take a look to if there's a gap out there that was left behind that we could work on that. But 119 and 84 in the language that was passed into law did create a first-time application process for a surviving spouse, regardless of the amount. And that's, I'd worked on that with you, Mr. Chair. So.
And you might want to share, when we're done here, you might want to connect with Mrs. Schultz there and go through that, what we did last session.
Thank you.
And I think Mr. Kaiser wanted to testify. Please introduce yourself for the committee.
And Chairman, my name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council. And as a testifier for this particular bill on last year and all of the ones that's currently in session or in on the books. Certainly this is another addition to that that I think needs to be taken care of, from the permanent to from the non-permanent to actually permanently 100% is a situation where we're not going to be leaving these widows behind and not being able to apply for this. Question: there is other bills that are trying to eliminate the 8-year hold on it now to go to for lifetime or when they get married or sell the home. And but the United Veterans Legislative Council, along with some other organizations, totally support this change in it that would improve the situation for the widows, like she just said. Agent Orange is a pretty bad debilitating disease, and as a combat veteran of 2 tours in Vietnam, I became 100% myself. I don't have Agent Orange, but it's I flew through it all for 2 years, and I don't have it. So, but other people did, and so this can be taken care of. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kaiser. Are there any other questions from the committee? Are there any other people that would like to testify from the audience? Okay. But then, Representative Torgelson, closing remarks.
Just appreciate your support, Mr. Chair.
And again, thank you for bringing it. And as I mentioned before, committee members, we've been working on this whole issue of spouse benefits for several years now. And this is just another area that we've come across that we want to work on. So the chair renews his motion to House File 3503 be amended. As amended, be referred to the Tax Committee. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and House File 3503, as amended, is referred, re-referred to the Tax Committee. Thank you, Chair. The next bill on the agenda is House File 3934. Representative Wills will please come to the table and with your testifiers. And I will move House File 3934 before the committee, and that it is be re-referred to the Great Tax Committee. Right, Tax Chairman? Little nod there. Yep. I understand you have an author's amendment, and the A1 amendment. Does anyone have a copy? Does everybody have a copy of the amendment, the A1 amendment? I will move Representative Wills' author amendment to get the bill in the shape that you would like to have it in. And are there any discussions? All in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the House File 3934 is amended with the A1 amendment. And President Wills, please talk about your bill. Welcome to the committee again, and introduce your witnesses also.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. House File 3934 came about in response to a situation that we discovered after passing the military pension subtraction effective for tax year 2016, where individuals who were applying to get that subtraction, several have been denied the subtraction and been told they are not eligible because they have civil service, which has that particular pension had been rolled in with their military pension, and when the amounts are not distinguishable, Minnesota Revenue has determined that they would not be eligible at all, and which I believe was an unintended consequence when we passed the legislation. We intended that anyone who received a military pension would be able to benefit. So today I have with me Don Sinwell, who is a constituent of mine who dealt with this personally with his father-in-law, and he'd like to share the situation that he ran into with this.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair. My name's Don Sinwell. I'm also a veteran. Excuse me. When my father-in-law, Joe Wonderchek, he spent 20 years active duty. When he retired from his active duty time, he went in and he recruited a job with civil service. They worked out of Fort Snelling for another 20 years with the maintenance team, again, working with the military, ensuring that they were, ready to go to combat. They were combat ready. So he did that for 20 years. But when you go from the military to the civil service, they roll your time and your pension, everything into the civil service. So when you retire, it appears that you have 40 years of civil service. When in actuality, you have 20 years military and 20 years civil service. So this is something we've been trying to get rectified through the IRS. We've sent letters to the IRS. We've sent emails to the IRS. We've heard from them that they've received them, but nothing has happened. This last year when Joe applied for that, he received a letter from the Minnesota Revenue Service that said he is not eligible for this deduction. And that's what this is. It's just a simple fix for, I know of three people myself that are having this issue, Joe, and then two other veterans that live in the building that he's in, in the retirement building that he's in. And I'm sure there are quite a few more out there. But this is just a simple fix for this, and this would help because right now, working through the Minnesota Revenue and the Internal Revenue Service, we're just not getting anywhere. So this would save time and money and effort on everybody's part to make this fix. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Lesh.
Is this going to tax committee?
That's correct, okay. Representative Lesh.
I'll ask those questions there then. Thank you.
Okay. So, Representative Wills, from what I understand is that it would probably be 50% of their, so they would be able to take the 50% of the military pension and make that under our current tax code of being exempt from state taxes. Am I correct on that?
Yes, Mr. Chair. And if you look at the bill language, it addresses in the second clause and the third clause two separate types of pensions that would be considered ineligible because they've been rolled in together with the military pension. So if the first one is the Federal Employee Retirement System pension, and the second one is the Civil Service Retirement System pension. And for efficiency's sake, these veterans have been told to roll their pensions together into one, which makes sense, but now there's no way to distinguish how much is which for them to be able to get the military pension subtraction through our Minnesota revenue. So what we're looking at doing here is just saying, rather than receiving zero benefit, they at least get 50%. Okay. So I think it's fair to make sure that these veterans are getting the benefit until at least the federal government can straighten out and disaggregate the information for veterans. This makes it simple and easy to apply the deduction for those veterans.
Well, thank you, Representative Wills. And are there any other questions from the committee? So any other testifiers? Okay. With that, Representative Wills, any closing remarks?
We'd appreciate your support.
Okay. Well, the chair renews the motion that House File 3934, as amended, be referred to Tax Committee. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and House File 3934, as amended, is referred to the Great Committee of Taxes. Our next bill on the agenda is House File 3387. Representative Howell, please come to the table. I will move House File 3387 before the committee, and that it will be re-referred to Commerce Committee. And Representative Howell, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is response to a bill that we passed last year with regards to attorneys that handle veteran disability appeals. And so I was trying to address the most what I think onerous piece of the bill that requires, and the bill, the original bill, if you're not familiar with it, the first section basically required that it established what you had to have a disclosure form signed by the veteran. The second part established that you must provide that disclosure in any advertisement that you did. And then the third part established a penalty for that. I believe that the advertising disclosure piece was probably onerous, and I think it's onerous and was more of a penalty than it was to do anything. I do believe that maybe that disclosure form was all right, but I've just been informed today as I put this bill in, I thought I was doing the right thing, but today I found out that even if I put this in, and we do exclude the advertisement, we have a conflict with federal law. So I propose that I'll probably look at maybe leaving this in and proposing an amendment to the bill to basically what it would say is that the provisions of this current statute would apply to attorneys and agents not accredited by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs. Because that would allow the attorneys and agents currently working in this field not to be in conflict with this current statute and federal law. And to maybe make that a little bit clearer, I've got a testifier, and I'll go to them at this time, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself to the committee.
Yes, good afternoon, sir. My name is Francis Herbert White III. I'm a retired Air Force Master Sergeant and an attorney who is accredited with the United States Department of Veterans Affairs to provide veterans appeal benefits appeal services. Unlike any of the testifiers that you had when you were reviewing HF 1209, none of the attorneys who testified before this committee and any other committee were actually accredited. You sought advice from other attorneys. As a senior NCO, one of my primary responsibilities was to tell the colonel when the baby was ugly. And colonel, this baby is ugly. This baby is ugly for a number of reasons. First and foremost, as Representative Howe has stated, it is in conflict with federal law. The provisions of a accredited attorney or agent is covered under Title 38 of the United States Code, and is regulated by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, the Office of General Counsel. In addition to that, it is entirely preempted, and if I can refer the committee to a case, it is Sperry versus Florida at 373 U.S. 379. Specifically, it states in there that states cannot add to the requirements for people who are licensed to perform before certain agencies. I can give you a pin site, if you will. That would be pin site at 385 for the attorneys among you. Second of all, this is onerous, and it's onerous both on the provider, myself, other attorneys and agents, because it requires us to take out advertisements, speaking specifically to the advertisement, that would add approximately $15,000 to my practice in order to actually supply the disclosure form in a one-page advertisement with the Star Tribune that would run on a Sunday. Second of all, it would require me changing my business cards from a $79 run to a $655 run in order to include that on the back, and it would require a folding business card. Third of all, it's onerous ethically because you are asking attorneys who are licensed in this state and regulated by the bar of the state to supply information to potential clients that they can receive representation that is equal to non-attorneys. Third of all, it is onerous because it burdens our speech. It requires us to make statements. And while it is not uncommon to include that type of language in contracts, this goes beyond anything that you'll find in statutory language. It's also burdensome on the prospective veteran client because it requires them, just based upon the language of the disclosure notice alone, it requires them to speak by signing that disclosure and says that they cannot hire us unless they do. And finally, it burdens their speech. Most importantly of all, it is not resulting in what this committee and the legislature intended it to result in. Since the passage of this bill, I have ceased representing before the Department of Veterans Affairs Minnesota veterans. I represent veterans from other states, but not from Minnesota. And the reason is simple. I will not be required to speak when I don't want to speak, and I will not subject myself to a $1,000 a day fine for refusing to do so. I've had three veterans who have been referred to me from three different county veteran service officers because they came across situations that they could not handle themselves, and they asked me to take a look at it. And I looked at them, and two of those cases were extremely viable. They had good arguments based upon legal arguments, not on factual arguments, and those cases I had to turn away. And they don't have representation, at least not from an accredited attorney or agent. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? We have Representative Rosenthal.
I can wait till we hear everybody.
Okay. And then Representative Polston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. White, how many accredited attorneys like yourself are there in the state of Minnesota?
I don't believe there are that many. I've never actually done an account. The VA Office of General Counsel actually compiles a list of that, and if you go and you look on there, you can find the attorneys that are accredited and agents as well. Because it's not just attorneys. You can be an agent.
Okay. Representative Poston?
Yeah, one other question. With you not being able to represent our veterans, and I understand what you're saying, how many veterans get denied claims because they don't have the proper representation?
Mr. White?
The only people who would have that information would probably be the United States Department of Veterans Affairs.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, can you remind me, or maybe Representative Howe, you can remind me, this whose bill was this when it was originally passed that your testifier referenced the bill number 12-something?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that it may have been Representative Cornish's.
That's correct. Representative Lesh?
Okay. Well, that helps because now I can disparage Representative Cornish without him being here. I have just vague recollections of how this went through. And I know there was a story behind it. Representative Cornish was upset about the story. He thought that someone hired an attorney and could have gotten the same thing for free, which I vigorously disagree, but it did make it through. And I just want to state for the record, I fully support Representative Howe's direction on this because I've heard from several attorneys, I'm not sure if they were accredited or not accredited, about how much of a problem this is. And if the suggestion was made that I had to, as an attorney, tell someone that they could go down the street and talk to someone who was an attorney for free and get the same advice or service that they could get from me, I'd be pretty insulted. And I also know that I routinely refer people. Folks come to me because I'm a veteran. Veterans come to me on legal issues. But if they have a veteran-related issue, I don't generally practice in that area, so I refer them out. because I can't do as good of a job as you can, sir, or someone else can. So, but I don't necessarily refer them to someone who's going to do the job for free. So whatever you need to do to fix this, Representative Howe, please do that, because I appreciate the direction you're going. And I've heard from multiple people of the onerous nature of the law that was passed, Representative Cornish's intentions notwithstanding. And I hope that we can reverse that so people will have access to your excellent testifier here in order to not just get the question, Representative Poston, as to whether they get denied or not, but at what level they get approved. Because one of my best friends who bought my old house probably should be at 100%, and he's sitting here at 60 because he's going back and forth with the VA. And he won't go down as having been denied, because he got something, but he doesn't get everything that he's entitled to. So that's everything, Mr. Chair.
Representative Poston, did you want to any comment on that? Okay. Well, I know, Representative Howell, that you will have an amendment ready to go when this takes the next stop in Commerce. So I think that should be able to, cover the bases that you want as this bill goes forward. Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the department going to comment?
Yes, department. Why don't we bring the department down right now and have them make their comments? And then Representative O'Driscoll, too, will have a question, too. Thank you.
Just be available just in case somebody's got a question.
Again, welcome. Please introduce yourself.
Chair Detmer, members of the committee, my name is Ben Johnson. I'm the legislative director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. This particular bill, as drafted, MDVA is opposed to it in its current form. Bill was introduced in the past two sessions. All of the language that was included in that went through multiple committee hearings. Was reviewed by MDVA, was reviewed by the governor's office, was reviewed by legislative staff. The disclosure form itself does not say you cannot hire an attorney or a for-profit provider to assist you with your appeal or claim. It simply is a form that you acknowledge that you can receive those services from other providers at no cost. Nowhere does it claim that it's a better type of service than an attorney could provide. Nowhere does it claim that you should hire or should not hire an attorney. It simply states that there are resources currently available, being paid for by the state of Minnesota, county veteran service officers, and the federal government, that there's a network of providers available. It is not intended to put anyone out of business. We've had some conversations about the advertising requirements with various organizations, including the Minnesota State Bar Association, and Representative Howe has been very willing to continue to discuss going forward how this bill occurs. But I'd like to highlight that it was widely supported by the Commander's Task Force, which is 9 of the largest veteran service organizations. It was a legislative initiative of theirs over the past 3 years, maybe farther back than that. Supported by the governor's office as an agency initiative last year. In addition, we've had widespread support from the county veteran service officers. So in its current form, MDVA is not supportive of this bill. I look forward to seeing where we can go from here.
Are there any questions for the testifier, for Mr. Johnson? And Representative Howe, I know you'll be working closely with the department and working on getting that in the shape that you want for the next stop. And I'm sure that the department, Mr. Johnson, will be attending that committee hearing, too, to take a look at it. And I'm sure you'll get the language prior to the next committee hearing.
So.
Thank you. Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe Mr. Johnson wants to respond to this. Representative Howell, thank you for looking at this. I know we had some good intentions on this bill last year to try to bring it forward, and when it's not working, it's not working. If it's not getting our veterans what they need, we have to do something. So I laud you for your efforts this session to try to make that happen. Mr. Johnson, to you, same kind of idea. If it's not working, Your previous testimony here, you said, you know, it's been through the governor's office, the department's looked at it, others have looked at it. Well, that's all great, but if it's not working, we need to have a solution. Do you have a solution that could help us to a problem to allow veterans to be able to have more options and to not have licensed attorneys who say, now we choose not to practice? You're closing a whole set of avenues for our hardworking veterans and people who have served our country when their time of need is most great.
Yep. Mr. Johnson?
Chair Detmer, Representative, we don't believe that the law precludes attorneys from continuing to practice. I provided Representative Howe with some examples of what the disclosure looks like in advertising just from a quick Google search online for providers in the state of Minnesota. Anecdotally, I haven't heard that this is a major issue. I know that there is a wide network of resources available to veterans in the state of Minnesota who may not get the service that they would like to get from whoever they're working with. But this is not intended to prevent them from going out and getting assistance. Until today, I had not heard the idea that there was going to be a trifold business card in order to capture the disclosure requirements. It's certainly worthy of consideration, but some forms of advertising are precluded from this requirement. And so we're happy to have the conversation, but I haven't heard of widespread issues with veterans not being able to get the help that they needed. Chair and Representative, I would also like to point, we've got a couple of groups in the audience, I believe, will also make comments about these kinds of services and what are available. But as far as the agency is concerned and the vetting, this is not a widespread issue that we're aware of. We are certainly aware of certain segments of the Veterans Service, but.
Okay. Thank you. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Johnson, I'm please don't take this as badgering. I just truly have some questions and some concerns on this when avenues are not available or are unilaterally taken off the table. There's got to be a reason why a group of providers are taking themselves out of the loop on this. And I think it would be in the best interest of Minnesota veterans that your agency dig deeper into this. Obviously, Representative Howe has heard about some things. Others have heard about some things. And so to say that you don't have any hard and clad evidence right now, boy, I would be willing to bet that the signature on that bill is just about dry right now, because it was about 9 months ago that bill has gone into effect. So I don't expect us to have a lot of concrete, but we certainly are getting inquiries, and we're starting to see something bubble up from the roots up here. So maybe not another question, but certainly a comment that I'd like to have you walk away with and address, Mr. Johnson. Thank you.
And knowing Mr. Johnson, he'll dig deeply. So thank you. And Representative Rosenthal.
Don't go away.
Mr. Johnson, it's a workout plan for you today.
Mr. Johnson's ready to go start digging deeply. You know, here we go. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Howe. My take is a bit different than Representative Driscoll's and Representative Lesh's. Allowing someone to know that a service is available for free, I think, is a good thing. It doesn't, strap them into a contract with anybody. The lawyers can still represent them. So I think your heart's in the right place, but the bill in its current form is a disaster and will not do things that we want for our veterans. So I hope that you work on it. I sit on the Commerce Committee, and I'll be watching what comes through. And could you describe a little more about what your amendment will do?
Representative Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment will actually leave the bill in its current form, or actually not the bill in its current form, but the statute in its current form, and then add its applicability to those attorneys and agents that are not federally accredited. So if you're federally accredited, this statute won't apply to you. So it'll apply to those that are not federally accredited.
Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Howe, what was your driving force behind this bill, if you don't mind my asking? And to the attorneys in the room, I mean, having to tell a potential client, if I'm going to an attorney and I see something that something may be free and I don't know what that is, I'm more comfortable with an attorney, I'm going to sign the thing and stay with the attorney. But just allowing them the knowledge, what's out there, I think is a good thing, not a bad thing. The more information our veterans have, the better off we are.
Representative Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I could ask Mr. Johnson, if who can file a disability claim, a VA claim?
Mr. Johnson.
I actually have to plead ignorance in this case. I've never filed disability claims. I've never been a VA representative at the federal level or through the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. So I could tell you what I think I know, but that wouldn't be accurate necessarily. So,
Representative Howe, usually when you ask a question, you know the answer, right?
Well, I'm not, and I'm going to say I don't know exactly, but I was hoping he was going to be there. I think there are people out here that do know that answer, and we'll wait till they come up.
Okay.
But I was going to save this for my closing remarks, but I'm going to throw it out. I'll throw it out there now. I tell you what, I get phone calls from my soldiers all the time. Because, and I will call my soldiers because they deployed with me. I was their commander. I was their leader. They'll always be my soldiers. And they continually call me. And when they call me on disability claims, my first response is go contact your county veteran service officer. And many times that's all I need to say. But there are times that say, I've already been there, that's why I'm calling you. And that's when I turn, and I believe that life is about relationships. And relationships, to me, put tools in my toolbox. Just like I've got relationships with all you, you're all tools in my toolbox that I can pull out and use to solve one of my problems. Just like I am a tool in the toolbox to my soldiers. So what has happened because of this bill, I've got a tool that was taken out of my toolbox. I've got an attorney that deployed with me. He does appeals on veterans' claims. He's done it for the past 5 years. He's got one, in those 5 years, he's returned $1.9 million in back pay claims to those Minnesota veterans. Never lost a case. Doesn't serve Minnesota veterans anymore. That's a tool in the toolbox that has been removed because of this law. I'm going to do whatever I can to return that tool to my toolbox and make it available to the veterans that need to take that claim and get it to completion and get them their dollars and get them the money they deserve.
And
that's
Howell,
the intent that I'm looking for.
Yeah, we're going to continue on. I think we have some people in the audience would like to testify. And just for your information, I've got the hammer in the toolbox here, right here. So, but we'll go on. And is there anybody else that would like to testify on this bill? Please come forward.
Am I good now? I think you're good to go.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Please introduce yourself for the committee.
Chairman, committee members, my name is Christopher Hinton. I'm a county veteran service officer in Waseca County. I am also the legislative representative for the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers.
Welcome.
Thank you. State of Minnesota is one of many great states in our nation that is blessed with having county veteran service officers. The statute was passed by your predecessors in 1945. There's qualifications that go along with that, being a resident of Minnesota, a citizen of the United States, and a veteran. Along with that, there are duties that CVSOs have to do, and everything that we've been talking about, finding the aid for our veterans and helping them with their claims and everything that we've just been talking about down to alcohol and drug dependency and abuse, that's all part of our job, okay? Based on the longstanding traditions that we have here, including those state statutes and our oath of office that we took upon entering our office, coupled with the robust accreditation and certification trainings that we have to take every single year, we are best suited to competently and ethically represent our veterans pursuing their earned benefit entitlements. Several veterans, dependents, and survivors that pursue their benefit entitlements are in crisis situations. They fall in low-income categories or fall within disparity class at that time when they make that application for those benefits. The professionals in our association are trained to look at the veteran's situation holistically. We assess the needs and all the benefit entitlements, federal, state, community, nonprofit assistance, and aims of stabilizing their situation by addressing the root causes of their unique situation and service. To not mandate for-profit entities to divulge the existence of such a specialized service to serve them that is paid solely from county tax levies, specifically while those for-profit entities are marketing their services, would not be equitable or in good conscience to our veterans. I would argue that the point of this is the point of the importance of the disclosure to be in the advertising as it is during the presentation of the actual disclosure form. Like, I messed the way I set that up, but it's just as important to have that in the advertising as it is when we present the form. The fear that we have is that during the consultation, the veteran may feel inclined or vested from the interaction and the consultation that has taken place that they might just go ahead and sign away. What we would like to see is that this disclosure be done up front. Right now, as the law states, there isn't a certain time that that disclosure has to be read and has to be signed. So if that comes at the end, well, the veteran's already gone through the entire spiel, and they may feel just as inclined to just go ahead and write it out. So if they were to repeal that language, I think that we just feel that having that in place gives the veteran the information that they need to make the best possible decision for what they want to get done.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Hinton.
Thank
and,
you.
And anybody else from the audience, please come forward.
Mr. Chair.
Sorry. Okay.
Welcome. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Chairman and Committee. My name is Benjamin Krause. I am a veteran with 100% permanent and total disability rating. I am an investigative journalist who regularly investigates the Department of Veterans Affairs nationally. I also own my own veteran law practice where I represent veterans related to their rights on a variety of issues, not just disability compensation, but other issues. I just got off the plane yesterday from San Diego from a national conference and have learned about some advancements in this particular area and wanted to talk about that. First of all, I have spoken with Mr. Johnson before about some of our concerns within our community. When I say our community, I'm referencing attorneys and agents who are accredited by the Department of Veterans Affairs related to the practice of, you know, benefits adjudication to the agency. And I think it's important to highlight that the processes that we're talking about are actually kind of complicated. The VA is very complicated. We know this by the news. We know this by talking with veterans trying to get their benefits, whatever the benefits are. Speaking on behalf of myself as a disabled veteran, I can tell you that the VA provides notice to every veteran of the free services that they can get at every step of every stage of that process. So to speak to the representative's question over there about notice, veterans get notice all the time from the VA. It's written down. It's on every form letter that every veteran always receives. So this, if anything, is duplicative. Now, one of the other concerns that I have, of course, deal with the First Amendment of the Constitution, which I believe is very important. And looking at this, it appears to be that this is definitely a violation of the First Amendment and my speech the speech of veterans. It runs in interference with respect to the right to contract. It runs into problems with the federal government related to the foreclosure of this area, because the federal government's been given the sole discretion to adjudicate these types of issues, to deal with the issue of accreditation, and to allow attorneys and agents the opportunity to represent veterans for a reasonable fee that they have the sole discretion of adjudicating as to whether or not it's reasonable. Now, in addition to that, I can tell you that other states were pressed with this particular issue in addition to Minnesota before Minnesota took this up. They include Washington State, and they include Iowa. Now, as I understand the genesis of this particular legislation, it was originally created for the purpose of preventing what are called pension poachers, who would have been behaving illegally anyway because they weren't VA accredited, or lawyers, as I understand it, from going into nursing homes and beguiling certain elderly individuals into signing into agreements where they give away their pension. That is most certainly not what VA accredited representatives do. It would be completely illegal. If an attorney did that, it would likely be unethical, and we would lose our bar license. The record is replete with different examples about why an accredited attorney like myself could not do that, and most of us would never do that. If we did do that, I would encourage any Minnesota CVSO to report us to the bar or to report us to the AG if we were behaving in that type of manner. And there are channels within which that have existed for many decades to make sure that attorneys engaging in that type of unethical or unlawful behavior are held accountable. Now, again, in Iowa and Washington, as I understand it, and I just learned this over the weekend, it sounds like Washington has repealed the type of legislation that we have here. And again, this is, I understand it because I got off the jet. I didn't have a chance to research this. And also, Iowa has passed this through their state senate. And so they're in the process of repealing the same type of legislation we have here. In addition to that, myself and other attorneys are in process of filing a lawsuit against the state of Minnesota for injunctive relief against this particular legislation. And again, our intent here is not to prevent veterans from being informed. We have lots of forms and lots of documents. The VA spends tens of millions of dollars to inform veterans of their rights. That's not what we're talking about here. I'm a disabled veteran. I fought for the First Amendment. I deserve a right to exercise my business rights, my rights as an individual, under that same First Amendment, and I believe that this particular legislation has passed encroaches on my rights. In addition to that, I can also tell you that I cannot, as an attorney, afford $15,000 to publish this in any one-page publication in the Pioneer Press or Star Tribune. In addition to that, I couldn't afford to put this type of disclaimer on a billboard. So we see Minnesota CVSO billboards all across the state in almost every county. I haven't seen a whole lot of attorney advertisements in any manner in that way.
Mr. Krause, could you finish up? Because we're going to be sending this to another committee, and hopefully you would be available during that time frame.
Absolutely, and hopefully I'll have more time to research what the other states are doing at that point.
Because we've been on this piece of legislation for about 30 minutes now, so let's go forward.
Just absolutely.
Wrap it up.
Hey, I just thank you all for looking into this. That's all I have left.
Okay, thank you. Representative Becker Flynn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think just for the public's benefit, I did just want to clarify, looking at the bill, that it's not forcing anyone to pay for advertisements. It's if you're already advertising, it's requiring the disclaimer. So thank you.
Okay, we're going to move on here. And Representative Howe, some closing remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess what I would ask you to do is just help put that tool back in my toolbox and every disabled veteran's toolbox, and so they have what they need. As I am a disabled vet, I went through the CVSO. I know the great things they do, but I also know their limitations, and we need those other tools in the toolbox. We need those other avenues to get things done. So I'll leave it at that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Howe, Representative Howe. Chair renews the motion that file 3387 be referred to the committee conference committee. All in favor?
Aye. Or, excuse,
Commerce Committee. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. House file 3387 is referred to the Commerce Committee. Next bill on the agenda, is House File 3750, and we've got Representative Frankie Bill. Welcome to the committee. Welcome to our committee, as you are part of the committee. Representative Frankie, would you like to move your bill before the committee as it will be re-referred to the General Register?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would like to move House File 3750 and have it re-referred to the General Register.
Representative Frankie, your bill is before us, and please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House File 3750 is a statutory correction and clarification to the Minnesota GI Bill, which we passed last year. It was part of the governor's recommendations and included in the state gov finance omnibus bill. The bill expands the GI program, Minnesota GI Bill program, to include apprenticeships, on-the-job training, and makes changes to educational assistance benefits for our veterans, including the National Guard. When the bill was drafted last year at the revisor's office, a section of language was put under an existing subdivision in statute, and when it should have been given its own subdivision. This bill moves the section of language to its own subdivision. I also have Ben Johnson, Legislative Director of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, with me, who can also help explain these changes and answer any questions.
Mr. Johnson, you probably should probably get your own seat for this committee. Welcome again. Please introduce yourself.
Chair Detmer, members of the committee, my name is Ben Johnson. I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I want to thank Representative Frankie for carrying this bill for us. There have been discussions about including it into the revisor's technical corrections bill, but that opportunity was missed. So as he outlined, this is language that was passed last year. Should have been inserted under its own subdivision within 197.791. It was an expansion of additional professional or educational benefits to be utilizing the Minnesota GI Bill. So this doesn't change existing law. It simply clarifies that this is standalone, a standalone option for using the $10,000 available to any veteran in the state of Minnesota for continuing education, apprenticeship, on-the-job training, and in this case, additional professional educational benefits like licensing, testing, certification. All it does is move it to the correct place and correct internal citation. Happy to take any questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Johnson. And, you know, we make technical changes in legislation all the time when it comes back. Oh, we misplaced it within the bill, so this is something that we needed to do. And thank you, Representative Frankie, for bringing it to our attention. And any other questions? Any other questions from the audience? Okay, closing remarks, Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I just appreciate your support. We want to get this right for our veterans and our National Guard members. Thank you.
Representative Frankie renews his motion that House File 3750 be re-referred to the General Register. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and House File 3750 will be re-referred to the General Register. The final bill on the agenda today is Senate File 1703, Representative Poston's bill. Welcome. We heard the bill in the House version and the House File 2276 in the committee last year. Committee and sent it to the General Register. The Senate passed the bill last year, but it was not taken up in the full House of Representatives, so it was returned to the Veterans Affairs Division. So we just wanted to kind of give the committee kind of an update. And Representative Poston, would you like to move your bill, Senate Bill 1703, back to the General Register?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's what I'd like to do.
Okay. Representative Poston moves Senate File 1703 be returned to the General Register. Why don't I give you some time to talk about it a little bit? I'm sorry. I'm trying to speed things up here, but I better I'll save my remarks there as we go forward. Go ahead.
I'll be real brief, Mr. Chair and members. We heard this bill, as the chairman said last year, and it bipartisanly went through this committee and then stalled. We've had thousands of veterans affected by atomic war, atomic testing, and mostly atomic cleanup.
so I think it's appropriate for us to recognize them. July 16th is the date that we'd like to designate as Atomic Veterans Day, and that day is because in 1944, that was the first time an atomic bomb was detonated. Okay? And that was in the United States, and that was a test. So I think it's time to recognize those veterans that have been affected by atomic war testing and, again, most importantly, doing cleanup. There is no cost to this bill, and I'd like to move it back to the General Register.
Okay. And there's another bill that we have also, the General Bessie bill. Representative Lewick, I know you carried that bill, and it's sitting on the General Register, too. No, it's not. Okay, please.
No, it's in our senior committee right now. Okay. It was put. It didn't come all the way back here.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Well, Representative Poston moves that Senate File 1703 be returned to the General Register. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and Senate File 1703 is returned to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Committee members, next we have some presentations. I've always thought it when we have different groups that come before us, and also that with legislation that provided funding for these different groups, organizations, that they come and give us a kind of a heads up on what they've been doing. And the first group is the Minnesota Remembers Vietnam. Mr. Stradinsky, please come forward to the table with your testifiers and have everyone introduce themselves. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you. I'm Bill Strasinski, and I'm here today representing the Friends of Minnesota Public Television. And I'm here to thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your authorship and leadership on a bill that was enacted last year called Minnesota Remembers, or Vietnam Minnesota Remembers. It's been quite a process, quite a year. And we'll share with you some of the activities that are going on and it will be going on. I just want to say that this was a living project. It'll continue for quite some time. There's a lot of data that's been collected, a lot of programs and thoughts have been shared, a lot of tears have been shared by Minnesota veterans over the years with respect to this initiative. And for me personally, as a veteran who was in Vietnam 50 years ago today, humping the boonies, I can tell you that this program and initiative that you started here has provided an opportunity for a lot of us to come to grips and heal a little bit with some of the issues. I think it's interesting, when I was drafted in 1966, late in 66, and in Vietnam in 67, it was a two-year initiative. I was told by the government, give me two good years. That was the government side of it. They never told me that I'd be spending the rest of my life dealing with some of the issues that I had encountered in those 2 years. So this has been a wonderful experience and opportunities for me and Minnesota veterans. And on behalf of all Minnesota Vietnam veterans, I thank you for your leadership and the committee's support for this project passed last year. So.
I'm going to start off with a quick video, Derek. You can
please introduce yourself to the committee.
My name is Katie Carpenter. I'm the project lead for Minnesota Remembers Vietnam at TPT.
In 2017, the PBS documentary series, The Vietnam War, sparked a national conversation.
Slating real quick.
Legacy funding made it possible for the six stations of the MPTA to launch Minnesota Remembers Vietnam, a statewide multimedia story gathering project encouraging Minnesotans to add their own voices to this conversation.
Vietnam veterans are men and women who every day think of the war and think of those who died in it. Whether anybody else thinks of the war or not, we remember. We remember.
I honestly was scared for a year.
Area 54.
stations across the state have gathered together veterans and community members to remember, honor, and understand the events of 50 years ago. At the heart of the initiative is the Story Wall, an online space for sharing and exploring personal narratives through photos and videos.
My husband is a Vietnam vet, and I guess I will say that I was a Vietnam protester. But in the end, it was about living in a country we both loved and wanted to support.
Each entry in this digital collection offers insights and important lessons for Minnesotans, including younger generations learning about this chapter in our history.
I'm beginning to understand more about my father and how complicated he is. He's this great hero that is unknown to most of the world.
When I went to Vietnam, I knew I was going to be taking care of adults, GIs at least. I never dreamed I'd be taking care of children.
Sharing my story, I think, is very cathartic for me. I think it helps me more than I think it helps other people. And I think that's why I do it.
You're more than welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hello.
The MPTA is proud to continue this work across the state.
Good job. Thanks for sharing.
Hi, buddies.
Made possible with legacy funding.
Committee Chair Detmer, Vice Chair Bliss, and members of the committee, my name is Katie Carpenter, and like I said, I'm the project lead for Minnesota Remembers Vietnam at TPT. And the initiative is aimed at uncovering and preserving Minnesota's untold stories about this complex era in our nation's history. It's an honor to be here today on behalf of Minnesota's six public television stations to thank you because your support and leadership and also the generous funding from Minnesota's Legacy Fund not only allowed us to launch the initiative, but it was critical in creating a foundation of confidence that inspired private foundations and corporations, as well as individual donors, to contribute and double the funding of the initiative. And this level of funding empowered us to dream big and create an initiative that far exceeded any of our expectations, and that now is regarded as a national model for what it looks like for a state government, public media stations, and a strong network of community partnerships to come together to make an impact around an important topic. This fall, the record-breaking broadcast of Ken Burns and Lynn Novick's The Vietnam War got the nation talking and watching. Over 33 million viewers nationwide tuned into the series, while others watched it online, making it the most streamed PBS series ever. And this was a meaningful opportunity for us to complement the series with uniquely Minnesota stories, like the stories of the Hmong soldiers who fought in the CIA in the secret war in Laos, fought with the CIA in the secret war in Laos, or the Minnesota veterans who bravely performed their stories in an original play with a performing arts nonprofit called The Telling Project. Not only were these two original documentaries available across the state, but they were made available to over 75 million households through American Public Television. But the impact goes far beyond broadcast. The initiative's robust outreach and engagement strategy, paired with strong community partnerships like the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minnesota Humanities Center, Minnesota Military Museum, and the Metropolitan Library Service Agency, just to name a few, create exciting new and inclusive ways for all Minnesotans to remember, honor, and understand the events of 50 years ago. Across the state, sold-out screenings, story-gathering days, museum exhibits, community conversations, and even a concert of Vietnam-era music have highlighted diverse perspectives and have even inspired action. Like Steph Glazer, who's a young teacher who attended a fall event at McAllister College with the Vietnam veteran and author of The Things They Carried, Tim O'Brien, and the co-director of the Vietnam War, Lynn Novick. She was inspired to go back to her class and had her sixth grade students create dog tag poetry, The students were inspired by that, understood that the veterans never received the welcome home they deserved, and took it upon themselves to create a welcome home event just a few weeks ago. And she just recently reported there wasn't a dry eye in the house and sent some great photos that are on our StoryWall website. Echoing Mary Beth Crowley, who we saw in the video, a U.S. Army nurse, we've heard from so many people in our community that the process of sharing a story is in and of itself healing. And I'm really proud to say that with over 800 stories so far gathered at our StoryWall website, it's become really a safe place. It's been embraced by the community as a safe place to share and be heard and also connect with one another. People are leaving comments and engaging and actually finding each other. Many people have been looking for each other for years. So it's an exciting place for connection. And it's really a moving experience to see how it's evolving daily. You'll find a poem from a Vietnam veteran who had to leave a Vietnamese orphan behind, photos of an anti-war activist button collection and what those meant to her. Or you can listen to a song from a Vietnam veteran who recorded himself playing guitar in a hooch one night on bass. Or you can read the story of a Gold Star daughter who sought out her father's war buddies to learn about who he was. She wrote in a story, "I lost my dad, but have gained five other men that I'm honored to call dad. I'm so proud of my dad and all the guys. They have forever changed my life and my mom's too. We even went to DC and found him at panel 24E, line 115. And she wrote about sharing this story. "I hope my story can encourage others like me to reach out to the other soldiers that knew their parents and family, because it really heals the soul." And we're really seeing through this project that courageous stories like these do inspire others to share. And it's really creating this exciting ripple effect of hope and healing. And, you know, it's also partnerships like the Minnesota Humanities Center that they're here today. And, you know, working with people across the state to keep amplifying these stories and keeping the conversations going. I'd like to introduce my colleague, Randall Dietrich, who is going to give you a taste of what's to come, because this isn't the end of the project right now.
Okay, I just want to make sure we have four more groups to share, so let's keep it going. Thank you.
Randall Dietrich, Outreach for Twin Cities Public Television. Working in partnership with the public libraries, veterans have volunteered to share their stories at 10 metro area locations in a series of 90-minute community service conversations we're calling Vietnam 360. And there will be a statewide broadcast of a premiere of a new documentary called Perspectives that will premiere at the end of May. This one-hour documentary features a dozen Minnesota men and women with remarkable experiences from the Vietnam War. This is one of several veteran-focused documentaries to air on PBS this Memorial Day weekend. The war and its enduring legacy is now intergenerational. We didn't want to miss the chance to address, to speak to the children and even grandchildren of that Vietnam War generation. To do this, we've been talking this spring to social studies teachers across the state of Minnesota, as well as the thousands of students that participate every year in History Day in Minnesota. As far-reaching as the Ken Burns and Lynn Novak documentary was, I've had a heck of a time convincing my teenager to watch an 18-hour documentary program on television. It's just not how this generation receives and shares information. We've tried to meet them where they are, which means we're producing a series of short films to provide the essentials about the Vietnam War that can be viewed easily on mobile devices. And then finally, to wrap up, from June 21 through 24, we invite all Minnesotans to gather here on the grounds of the state capitol to remember, honor, and understand. At the heart of this experience will be a new, extensive, expansive replica of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, the Wall That Heals. Understanding this traveling memorial, as well as the permanent memorials here on the grounds of the state capitol, is an opportunity for our state's story to become part of the larger national and even international narrative. Art, music, museum displays, and the flyover of period aircraft will all come together in June 21 through 24 to provide an opportunity to learn and listen in an important historical context. Finally, called from the hundreds of stories that you saw on the story wall. We will invite a few of these contributors to speak to an audience at the Cedar Armory and hear more about them the evening of June 23rd. Details about that program can be found online at mnvietnam.org. And I look forward to seeing all of you back here in June, because there's a role for all of us to play in remembering, honoring, and understanding Vietnam. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we're going to just move on from here. And we have the next group is the Medal of Honor project update. Mr. Kramer. Welcome, Mr. Kramer. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Chairman Dittmer and committee members, thank you for this opportunity to be here today. My name is John Kramer, and I'm chairman of the Minnesota Medal of Honor Memorial, and I'm here today to provide you an update on the status of fundraising and other related projects that we're involved in. And I might clarify, the handout that you were provided with is not totally up to date. We have additional members to the honorary board and some other changes, but we have a significant change in that all of the full-time representatives of our state's nine military veteran organizations are now on our board, in addition to the names that you would see in your handout. I would first like to start updating you on the memorial, followed by some updates on other related efforts involving the character development program, workshops, recipient visits, and events and ceremonies that we are continually working on with the memorial. Before getting into details, I should first mention that we are within $63,000 of matching the $250,000 in funding the legislature granted this last year. And I, in that regard, I wish to add that the one-for-one matching funds has been a significant factor in obtaining the results we have achieved. There have been some headwinds in our fundraising that have certainly affected the private donor match we had expected to have by this time. In 2016, 3 months before the Medal of Honor convention, we were asked to curtail our funding to allow the convention to be fully funded for that event. We certainly were willing to do that. Given the working relationship we had with the convention that included hosting the kickoff event for the convention held right here on the state capitol grounds. Then, too, this past year, with the Super Bowl, our fundraising efforts were impacted considerably, as with the Medal of Honor convention the year before. With these two events past us, our fundraising effort is now looking up. And on the positive side, might I add, in our fundraising, back in 2016, a month after the Capital Area Architectural Planning Board approved the memorial project, and before a memorial design was even considered, we received a firm, unsolicited offer to provide memorial grant along with labor to install that granite in the memorial, whatever that was going to then thereafter turn out to be. This past year, we received another unsolicited sponsorship donation of $100,000, which was particularly gratifying. Charitable gambling organizations throughout the state have also been welcoming and responsive to our requests, providing donations ranging from $50 to $1,000. At this time, we have 20 sponsorship requests outstanding. Any one or two would be getting us to our matching fund objective. within the next couple of months, we're reasonably confident of having those matching funds to turn over to the state. That will allow the architects to move forward with the final construction plans that will take 3 to 4 months. That should allow us enough time to continue with our fundraising efforts to raise the balance of funding needed for the construction of the memorial, which is a total of $780,000. As we see it right now, at this time, construction of the memorial will likely take place in the spring of 2019, which to us seems like a reasonable objective. I might talk to you just very briefly about other ongoing projects.
Let's just keep it with this project, right, and because we have three more groups that have to give a report.
But thank you very much, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Kramer. The Minnesota Humanities Center Voices program update. Testifiers, Mr. O'Fallon. Welcome to the committee, and Mr. O'Fallon, just a reminder, we have two more groups behind you, and we need to try to get out of this room by quarter to three, so welcome.
Thank you, Chairman Detmer, and members of the committee. We'll be brief and to the point. Again, I'll start with thanks, as so many have done, for the support of the committee for the Veterans Voices Project at the Minnesota Humanities Center, which started a couple of years ago. And again, Chairman Detmer, with your and now Senator Jerry Newton's lead, Minnesota is the only state to have created October as Veterans Voices Month. And I'm just extremely proud of that. It started at the center and became an idea, and it's going forward. Part of the mission of the Veterans Voices Project at the Minnesota Humanities Center is, in fact, to continue to close the gap between the men and women who've served and the increasingly large population that is not. Just a fact. We've worked in partnership with the good people at TPT, for example, and especially on that word, understand. You have some handouts in front of you on projects, partnerships, programs that we've conducted over the course of the whole year, across the whole state. The Veterans Voices Award Program has been one of enormous personal impact. I think that the whole mission of the center is to close that gap and in many ways to build on what our friends at TPT called to understand what it actually means. A lot of the testimony you've heard today has been on what I would call the full cost of what we ask men and women to do. And our role is to help people understand that full cost in a deep way. It's one thing to collect stories. It's another thing to put people in the situation where, as one vet said, you need to hear the story. You really need to hear it to understand. I've asked three colleagues to join me today to make brief remarks, each from a different perspective. Blake Rondreau is here. Blake is our new Veterans Voices Program Officer at the center. Bruce Richardson is here. He's been a lead consultant for us on our portion of the Vietnam Remembers. And Sheila Loughton is here, home base of the Women's Veterans Initiative is at the center. They each have a couple of comments to make about the importance of the center to their program and their personal experience. Mr. Mm-hmm. Chair, if that's okay.
Okay, Mr. Rondo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Pull the mic in front of you there.
My name is Blake Rondo. I'm the Veterans Voices Program Officer. And again, to kind of highlight some of the things that we're thank you for your support in is the educators resource that we get to use. We work with educators to teach them how to talk about war. We've been at war for over 17 years, and some of these children don't know the world without it. So it's a huge topic that we like to hit, that we work with to kind of bridge that civilian-veteran divide. We also have the Minnesota Remembers Vietnam, six different communities that we will be working on. But one thing that I think is crucially important in the work that we're doing to highlight October this year, besides the Veterans Voices Award that is in its sixth year now, is to create grants for communities to highlight both the 100th anniversary of the ending of World War I, but also of veterans and Veterans Day and October being Veterans Voices Month. So we find that the answers are in the community to go out and seek what communities want, how they feel that they can best serve the veterans that have served them. And so that is where we think we will find the answer and what we've been doing and what will come from the center now.
Okay. Thank you. And Ms. Lofton?
Good afternoon. My name is Sheila Lawton. I am an Air Force retired lieutenant colonel and married to another Air Force retired lieutenant colonel, and we have between us over 60 years of service. From the women's perspective here in Minnesota, there are over 26,000 women veterans, and for many of us, it has been a matter of being invisible. Some time ago, you provided and agreed to a license plate. We were told we would not be able to have very many people would be interested, and without any advertisement, we have already gone pretty close to 1,000. So thank you very much for authorizing that. And we also worked with the Humanities Center and with Veterans Voices programs and awardees about the I Am Not Invisible program, again, recognizing that women veterans do contribute a lot. We have talked a lot about the Vietnam veterans, and it was nice to see a nurse, but there were other women who served, not in Vietnam, because obviously that wasn't allowed, but in Thailand, where they did the same kind of mission planning as men did. So with the Humanities Center and with Veterans Voices programs, the educator programs, we have opened up a lot of people's eyes as to what the typical veteran is. So my personal belief is I love to mess with people's stereotypes. I am a veteran, even if I don't have a button that says it. And it's great to be able to participate in the Humanities Center programs and say, yes, I am a veteran, my family is veterans, I have two sons who are in the military, and life is different because of those times that we served.
Thank you, ma'am, and thank you for your service. Mr. Richardson.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. I've got one quick story I wanted to share. As part of the Veterans Voices program at the Humanities Center, I've been around the state talking to veterans. I've been in Northfield, Wilmer, Marshall, Worthington. The story I want to share with you is the one from Worthington. There was a dad and his daughter who were at that particular session, and I asked, he had stepped away. I asked her if she was going to stay for the discussion part of it. This was on the Vietnam documentary. And she said, you know, he's on some meds. He's not feeling well. I think he's going to go. And I said, well, let's see if we can get him to stay. He stayed. And she said, oh, the other thing is he's never told his story before. And so he stayed. He told his story. And when it was done, he turned to her and he said, bet you've never heard that before. And she said, especially from you, Dad, especially from you. I have a special place in my heart for that story because I have a daughter about her age, and some of you know Molly, and because she's been a staffer here. And it's one of those special things that when you get to share those things with your kids, it's powerful. And I want to thank the Humanities Center and you for the opportunity to get those veterans to share, as Katie said, and to inspire others to share.
Thank you, Mr. Richardson, and the Humanities Center. Mr. O'Fallon, thank you again and for coming forward.
Can I have a 30-second closing remark?
Go ahead. Go ahead. Mr. Fallon.
Part of the work of the Humanities Center is we use all the power of the humanities. Here's a book of poems written by a Vietnam vet, John Lally, who's working closely with us. I just want to read the dedication. To my children, Ann and Chris, and my grandchildren, Brianna, Billy, and Sophie, in the fervent hope that they may better understand what, God willing, I went through, and that they, God willing, will never have to experience. Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Next, we have an update from the Veterans Rest Camp. Mrs. Allness, please come forward to the table and give us an update and addition to what's been going on at the Veterans Rest Camp. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Beforehand, I handed out this map right here, if you could refer to that. I want to start by saying thank you very much. The uniqueness of Veterans Campground cannot be emphasized enough. It's the only Yellow Ribbon campground in the United States that serves military veterans, their families, and their friends. Per state statute, Veterans Campground has the same obligation like other lodging facilities to be accountable for all their guests. And in the past 8 years, we have gone from 3,500 guests to 17,000 guests last year. As you can see on the map on the left-hand side, the old welcome center, the office where people check in, is set way back into the camp. This is because the camp expanded greatly in the past 6-7 years. And there are several roads that incoming visitors could just bypass the office, not sign in, and go throughout the camp. This cost us a lot of time. This is Ken Larson, our camp manager, tracking down visitors, making sure we have accountability of everyone. So as you can see from that left side, we have a safety issue. That was their biggest concern, and trying to abide by state statute. On the right-hand side shows the big, larger black rectangle box. That is where the new Welcome Center and Interpretive Center is being built, and nobody can get by unless they check in. So we are very, very appreciative. The benefits of the grant, it becomes, this new building becomes a welcome center, an interpretive center, and for visitors, that means learning the history of this 90-year-old camp. For veterans, this means getting some training, getting some knowledge, getting some information on reintegration issues and how the camp can help them. It's going to become a meeting center, an activity center, and with that many people, we needed another storm shelter, and it was built such. On the right-hand side, I also list some of the other benefits. Increased accountability, that's number one. Better tracking and statistics. Our camp manager, likes to provide to the state committees that support us information about how many Vietnam era or how many Korean era, how many Gulf era veterans we serve and how many family members. It adheres to, it adds value to the camp by far, and lastly, increased safety. So Ken Larson can address the status of the building right now and when it's going to open.
Welcome, Mr. Larson. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, Ken Larson, manager up at the campground right now. The building is up. We're waiting for the cement to be cured right now so we can put our tile in, and our goal is to have it open before we open April 13th. They're right there, and it's been a long time coming there, that's for sure. But that's what we're waiting for right now, and then we're getting some bids for a privacy fence so it doesn't disturb any of my campers up there where their RVs are, and the gate process of it. They'll come into the body office right there, sign in. If they don't belong there, they'll just make a U-turn and go around our building and go back out. So we're looking right now. We've actually got somebody giving me a bid on the gate up there right now, but we will have a gate in there, so we have to make sure we're all veterans up there because that's what we're founded for.
And for many of the committee members, this camp is a very historic camp. It dates back to the World War One. It was basically an overflow for the VA hospital. And now we have a lot of young campers with their young veterans with their families coming out and utilizing the camp. So the camp has been expanding, new playground equipment and so forth. But I'm planning on bringing a tour out there with the committee sometime this summer to take a look at the camp. So thank you so much for coming forward and for the work you do with our veterans at the Disabled Veterans Camp at the Vets Camp.
Thank you, Chair Detmer and committee members.
Finally, we have an update from the Camp Legionville. Mr. Tisdall, please come forward to the table with your testifiers and have them introduce themselves. And thank you for coming in and giving us an update on Camp Legionville.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Randy Tisdall, and I am the State Adjutant to Minnesota's American Legions. I have with me Roger Myron, the Finance Chair for Legionville's board, as well as our Board President, Wayne Gilbertson. In interest of time, I did kill a few trees for you, so take these about yourselves throughout the day and in the next few days and take a look at it. Gives you a general overview, the first one does, of what Legionville is all about. It's the only camp of its kind. The American Legion owns the property. along together with Minnesota State Highway Patrol and AAA, we train Minnesota's road crossing guards. As more and more school districts are going to adults to fill that position, we've expanded to school bus safety, water safety, other types of training, first aid, life-saving. We also now have there aboard the camp opportunities for the local Marine Corps, Navy, Armed Services to come in and do bring their poolies in and provide functions for them, as well as other veterans opportunities to camp there as well near the end of the year. Each year we do. So this one will give you that overview without words, but pictures, I think they say a thousand times better. What we're really here today is to give you an update on the process of the updates and how we've utilized the funding that you've made available to us for the Chow Hall. And that's the other handout that I've provided for you. First of all, thank you very much for the opportunity to have us here today to give you the update, and obviously thank you very much for the funding. We've worked with the Department of Admin. We've established the budget. We've got all the paperwork taken care of. Roger Myron is a past comptroller, full-time employee of the American Legion at the state level for us. He's a retiree, so we brought him out of retirement, and he's managing the grant along with the Department of Admin for us now. And things are moving along quite well. We've already gotten the nod to go ahead and start work. As you can see, as you page through the specific handout on the Chow Hall, it shows you that we've already removed all the basic equipment from the cooking area. We've pulled out all the reefers. The HVAC is starting to go in at this time, as well as some of the in-ground plumbing that had to be upgraded. All the plans, we used local as much as we could in the Brainerd Lakes area contractors, and those contractors obviously went through a bidding process with them to assure that we were in alignment with the grant, as well as any licensure and any type of state health code, since it is a food facility. So it's moving along quite well. We anticipate to have it open by our first session. We usually put about 600 kids through there. Once school's out, schools through the local post start sending kids up there in June. So hopefully we'll be ready for that first class. We think we're on track. Is that correct, Mr. President?
That's correct.
Okay. Next.
Did we make the deadline?
We're almost there. We're almost
right
there.
Thank you. Any questions?
Next, is somebody else going to have a testifier?
Yes. My name is Roger Myron. As Randy stated, they kind of pulled me out of retirement to come and work on this grant with them, and I'm happy to do so. As you know, we were awarded $222,000 to update the Chow Hall in Legionville, and I'm currently working with the Department Administration getting all the paperwork in line so we can submit for reimbursement. We currently have the invoice template created and the financial log to keep track of expenditures as we go, and I don't see any glitches. We have not yet officially submitted any reimbursement requests, but expect to do so in the very near future. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you. And thank you again for coming forward and giving us an update. And again, this summer, we would like to take a tour through the facility there, and that's something that we'll be working on. And was anybody else going to testify?
No, sir. I think. No.
Okay.
The President was here.
Okay. Just a reminder to the committee, our next meeting is a special call for the meeting that I'm calling for is for Thursday, March 22nd in room 10. And this will be about 15 minutes after session. With that, every day in Minnesota is a Veterans Day, and this meeting is